This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, August 11, 2021. Today will be better than yesterday. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. And I'm actually, Taylor, working from family house up in the Adirondacks. Very excited to be here. I don't know if you can hear the water in the background, but it's there, and I wanted to make you feel jealous.
Oh, I'm definitely jealous that you're up at Camp Olney. Can't hear the water. A little nice little breeze you got going on the porch there. I can see a taxidermy deer head behind you. That's fun. I like taxidermied animals.
Oh, great. Get me in trouble. Like, get me in trouble. Like, make it seem like I'm a hunter, okay? I don't even know where that came from.
Oh, sorry to blow up your spot. We know that you're not a hunter, and you love animals. That's canon on this podcast.
That's it. Right, exactly. And who knows? You know, maybe we can revitalize the deer when we're done. All right, let's get to the news and notes. Yesterday, Mookie Betts scratched again from the Dodgers lineup. Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, talked about the injured list being very probable for Mookie Betts, who's had that hip issue really bother him repeatedly in the second half of the season. The Philadelphia Phillies, in advance of that game last night, they placed home run and RBI leader Reese Hoskins on the 10-day injury list with a groin injury. Dodgers and Phillies played it out, and the Dodgers got help in the top of the fifth inning from Corey Seager.
Seager hits the ball a long way to left field. It is back. It is gone. A home run for Seager into the flower bed. And it's 1-0 Dodgers. Corey Seager with his fifth home run of the year.
That was Tim Nebritt, AM 570 LA Sports. The Dodgers win the game 5-0. So the team chasing the Phillies now in second place in the National League East, the Atlanta Braves. They face the Cincinnati Reds. And I got to say, to my son, who is a huge Braves fan, in the 3 weeks leading up to the trade deadline, he kept on saying, they got to get Adam Duvall back. They got to get Duvall back. Why didn't they sign Duvall? They make the trade for Duvall, and he has been helping out.
Hit high in the air to deep left field. Retreating is Aquino at the wall. It is gone for Adam Duvall. A rainmaker ties the game.
That from 680, the fan, the Braves go on to win that game over Cincinnati 3-2. The Mets game was suspended because of weather. They were trailing 3-1 at the time that was happening. At the end of Tuesday, the Phillies lead the Braves by a game in the National League East, the Mets by two games. A terrible moment in the game between the Tigers and the Orioles on Tuesday night. Derek Hill and Akil Baddoo were chasing a fly ball when this happened.
Santander to deep left center field. Hill tracking it. Baddoo, and they collide. Hill held onto the ball. Somehow, some way, held onto that ball. Both men remain down.
Yeah, and speaking with a source this morning, he indicates that both are likely headed to the injured list. Baddoo's a little better off at this point than Hill. He'll go on the concussion IL. Last night, they thought his concussion maybe was mild. Hill has some overall issues with ribs and a leg injury. Really terrible. You know, the Tigers have been playing so well. Those two guys have been doing a great job. So that injury is set back for Detroit. The Tampa Bay Rays placed Ryan Yarbrough on COVID-19 injured list, and they activated Randy Arozarena. They played the Red Sox yesterday. Boston pitching continues to be a problem.
Swing and a line drive, fair down the right field line. This should score a couple. Arozarena scores. Franco scores. Now the ball got away from Renfro. Here comes Meadows around third. He will score as well. Mejia clears the bases, and the Rays take a 7-4 lead.
On their way to an 8-4 win over Boston. That sound from WDAE. The Royals and the Yankees. And Salvador Perez came to the plate in the bottom of the sixth inning. Kansas City down a run. This is what happened.
High drive, deep to left. Racing back, Stanton. He is at the fence, and that ball is out of here. Salvador Perez ties the game with his second home run of the night.
Steve Fizeau, KCSP. The Royals' rally continued.
Ridings with the 1-2, and that ball is drilled in the gap left center field. That ball's going to get to the wall. Rivera's got a hustle around third. He's coming home, and he will score. The go-ahead to third is Dozier. He is out. But the Royals take the lead on the double by Dozier. It's 5-4 Kansas City.
And the Yankees would go on and lose 8-4. The Toronto Blue Jays played a doubleheader against the Angels yesterday. They lost game one of that doubleheader, but they came back in game two.
Swinging a line drive, base hit into left center field. In to score Bichette. Hernandez right behind him. Two runs are in on the base hit by Lourdes Gurriel Jr.
At the end of the day, in the American League East, the Red Sox 5 games behind the Tampa Bay Rays. The Yankees 2 games behind the Red Sox. The Blue Jays 2.5 games behind Boston. The Padres and the Marlins, they were tied 5-all. Bottom of the 7th inning, Austin Nola at the plate.
1-0, hit hard into left field. That's a base hit. Frazier's hitting third. He's rounding third. He's coming home. Alfaro's throw is not in time. RBI single, Austin Nola. And the Padres are back in front. It's 6-5 in the bottom of the 7th.
At from 97.3, the Fan. So the Padres, with that win, coupled with the Cincinnati loss to Atlanta, San Diego now 4.5 games ahead of Cincinnati for the second wild card.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirchin.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirchin covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, you got a broadcast tonight. Yes, Phillies, Dodgers?
Yeah, two first-place teams. You know, we did the Phillies like 10 days ago, and, you know, they were under 500, and it didn't look like they were going to make a run. Then they won, starting with our game against the Nationals, they won 8 games in a row, and now they're in first place in their division. And even though the Braves are charging and the Mets certainly aren't done by any means, the Phillies have made a quick turnaround here and have really played well in August. We'll see if they can keep that up. We got a good pitching matchup. Kyle Gibson, David Price, looking forward to it.
So Paul Imbakides, who we're going to hear from in a little while, a week ago, he made a prediction that the Phillies would wind up winning this division, and he's already doing victory laps over that prediction, okay? Are you confident about that? Because I still feel like that the Braves are going to be like, remember that Kentucky Derby when that horse Smarty Jones came up from the outside and wound up winning? I feel like the Braves are going to figure this out, Tim.
Yeah, well, Hembo should know there are no victory laps on August the 11th. That's always a dangerous thing to do. Look, the Braves have won 7 out of 10 since the trade deadline. They won 6 out of 7. They redid their whole outfield. They added power where they really needed to. Drew Smyly's been really good for them. They've upgraded their bullpen with Richard Rodriguez. And let's not forget, they came one base running mistake last year away from going to the World Series. Now, I don't think they're a great team by any means right now with all the injuries, but can they win this division? Of course they can. But suddenly we have a three-team race with no great teams in there, but Phillies are better than we thought lately, Braves better than we thought lately, and we'll see where the Mets go from here. So, yeah, no doubt the Braves can win this, but I think the Phillies can also, and so can the Mets. But a lot has to go right now.
Now, a lot of the conversation you guys are going to have tonight, no doubt about it, is going to be about the Dodgers' injuries. And I remember you and I talking on the trade deadline special last week or 2 weeks ago, how at the time the Dodgers made that trade for Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, I felt like it wasn't a case of, you know, the rich getting richer. I felt like it was a case of a team making deals for players that they would need because of other injuries. And Mookie Betts keeps on having this issue with his hip. And Dave Roberts talked about, well, I don't see him coming back before Friday, and that injured list is very possible. And around the edges, you know, we just saw the Dodgers place Clayton Kershaw on the 60-day injured list. Given his age, given his track record, all the mileage, Tim, I don't think you can count on anything there. So the Dodgers, while I think we look at them as being the most talented team in baseball, I don't see this juggernaut rolling into October and just blitzing other teams.
Well, I thought that's what we were going to see, but that was a month ago. And then I was, you know, then I thought, well, they got Scherzer and Turner. How can they lose from here? But if Mookie Betts is hurt and Clayton Kershaw is hurt, perhaps as bad as you suggest here, then they're a different team. I mean, the reason they're going to be the team to beat going into October is they can go Scherzer, Kershaw, Buehler, Urias, 1 through 4, completely healthy. Well, if that's not going to happen, now it's a different situation. And again, let's face it, Mookie Betts was as big a reason as any that they won the World Series last year. He won 2 World Series games with his glove and his legs. If he's not the same player because he's not moving well enough with a bad hip, then yes, the Dodgers have, you know, they've got their work cut out for them on every level to try to compete.
Now, while the Dodgers are dealing with that, we're seeing the San Diego Padres preparing for the return of Fernando Tatis Jr., Tim, as an outfielder, which to me makes a lot of sense. Like the Padres actually 2 winters ago talked to the Cleveland Indians about a possible deal for Francisco Lindor. This was before, you know, Tatis Jr. had that great performance last year. And I think there was a sense of, you know what, if Tatis Jr. can't figure it out at shortstop, then we can go get Lindor. He'll play shortstop. Tatis Jr. will be, you know, great in the outfield. I think this could be terrific with him coming back and a lot more manageable with that dislocated shoulder.
Yeah, you know, when Mookie Betts played second base the other day, Buster, I was amused by something I saw somewhere that the Dodgers are going to play him there, and somebody mentioned because it's less wear and tear on your body. Sorry, playing the infield is more wear and tear on your body than playing the outfield. All due respect to outfielders. And I think Fernando Tatis Jr. has a chance to protect the shoulder more by running around in the outfield as opposed to doing everything he has to do playing shortstop. There are more dive plays, there's more contact, there are double plays, everything else. And there's also, when you're this good of an athlete, you can move from center shortstop to center field. It's not going to be easy, and I'm not going to say he's going to be great out there, but Robin Yount won a gold glove at shortstop, moved to the outfield and won a gold glove in center field. Great athletes can do that. Tatis Jr. can do that. And they've proven they have other guys who can play shortstop, maybe not in the same level as him, but Jake Cronenworth can play shortstop. Manny Machado can slide over there. Kim can play shortstop. So maybe they have more options. And the number one thing is they have to get him back on the field no matter what, no matter where. So if center field is a safer place to play, put him out there and let him hit.
We talked after the deadline about how with all these trades, the Padres have strip mined their farm system. And they now, because that pipeline of pitching that we thought they had is not there, they seem to have, in the eyes of evaluators of other teams, a very specific window in which they might contend for the World Series 2021, 2022, and 2023 before Yu Darvish and Blake Snell and Joe Musgrove all move on to free agency. which is, you know, part of the reason why I think this is a good thing. Because I got to say, Tim, without Fernando Tatis Jr., I don't look at the Padres as being a World Series contender. What about you?
I agree, Buster. Look, before a couple other guys like Manny Machado got hot, this team was all about Fernando Tatis Jr. offensively, and then the rest was not particularly good. They can't win a stacked National League right now, you know, against the Brewers, Dodgers, Giants, without Tatis Jr., not just on the field, but at his very best. Now, they're a better offensive team than they were earlier in the year, but look, you're not going to win the World Series without that guy, not only playing, but playing his best. So that's why they have to protect him and make sure he's well.
Our friend Dan Shaughnessy, somebody you know very well, wrote a column on Sunday in the Boston Globe, basically mentioning in his eyes that the collapse that we've seen from the Red Sox is more of a regression to the mean, that this was inevitable, that the Red Sox would not play as well, that they had overachieved for a lot of months. I don't know if I agree. What about you?
Well, Dan is my mentor in this business. He's the best, one of the best columnists of all time, one of the greatest baseball writers ever. And I certainly see his point, but I'm not sure they overachieved as much as he thinks. And I still think they have a chance to make the playoffs. But I still think it comes back to they did not address their biggest need at the trade deadline. They needed another starting pitcher. They didn't get him. They needed a first baseman, and we'll see if Kyle Schwarber becomes that guy. But again, Franchy Cordero tried to play first base last night. This is not an easy position to play, and he did not handle a pop-up that probably would have been caught by a good first baseman, and that's part of the issue. So I'm not going to suggest that they totally overachieved all year. This is a good offensive team, period. Maybe a couple of their pitchers were better early than we thought they would be. Richards, Pivetta, those guys. But they're still in this thing because I'm just not convinced the Yankees are ready, or the Blue Jays are ready to just overtake the Red Sox. But boy, they're going to have to play a whole lot better than this. Dan is right on every level. They've lost 9 out of 11 and looked really bad doing it.
You know, when you do the show Get Up or you do SportsCenter, that the show producers absolutely love their sort of the, you know, the headline grabbing words. And so I suggested to Hembo yesterday, why don't we talk about the most important player in Major League Baseball the rest of the season? And to me, Tim, that would be Chris Sale. Because when you look at where the Red Sox are, you look at what happens in with the regression of the starting pitching, what Sale does the rest of the year, to me, is going to determine whether or not the Red Sox make the postseason. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a good point. But the difference is, Buster, a month and a half ago, he was going to be a luxury. Hey, look who we added, like a great trade that they'd made. And now he's not a luxury. He is a necessity. He's got to come back and be really good. He may not have to carry them, but he can't come in and just give them 3 innings and get out of there as he makes sure he stays safe, which is what he should be doing. He can't just come in and pitch the 6th inning and leave. He's going to have to come in, join the rotation, and be really good, because Pivetta, Richards, Erod, and even Nate Eovaldi hasn't been particularly good lately. So they're going to need Sale to be great. And maybe he can be. He's wildly competitive. He's got great stuff still. The numbers have been good so far. But I think that's an awful lot to ask for a guy who's missed as much time as he has.
Before you go, I want to ask you about the Orioles. And Taylor, get ready to jump in here. Tim, yesterday, I think I just woke up grumpy. And I was looking at the standings, and I was looking at where the Orioles are and seeing that they are now again on pace to win 56 games, which would be the 3rd consecutive full season, including 2018, 2019, in which they lost at least 106 games. That would be unprecedented in the American League. It looks like their run differential is going to be about minus 240, meaning over a 3-year period, their run differential would be about minus 770. And it just bothered me, Tim, because, look, I believe that what's going on here is that the franchise is tanking. And here's the thing. I got some pushback from Orioles fans. And here's the thing. It's either tanking or it's utter incompetence in terms of putting together a roster, because, let's face it, you can't be this bad, Tim, without working at it. Like, I think you and I both, you know, when we started covering baseball, we'd always hear from folks in the game, Every team starts out a season with 54 wins and 54 losses, and it's what you do with the other 54 that's difference making. And so when you have the Orioles win 47 games, Tim, you have to, in my opinion, you have to design a team to be that bad. What's your take on the Orioles?
Well, their pitching is indescribably bad right now. What is it, Buster? Six losses in a row. I think they've given up 9 runs a game or something. It's just absurd. And, you know, they're going to have a starter's ERA over 6 if they don't watch it for the season. Over 6. That's impossibly bad. And look, the tanking word, Buster, which you use a lot, I don't disagree with. I understand what you're saying. I know they're trying to win every single night out, but I would say they're poorly put together. And this is a rebuild. We understand that. But the rebuild has taken much longer than anticipated. It hasn't been done particularly well, obviously. And they just haven't found pitching anywhere. And they're going to have to find some. They have some pretty good everyday players, you know, Mountcastle and Hayes. And of course, Cedric Mullins is a good, you know, all-star player. But if you can't stop anyone from scoring runs, that's real dangerous. And again, it comes back to Buster. Maybe I'm a little bit too close to this, and to some degree that you are. Go look at how great this franchise has been in its history. The fans of Baltimore are rightfully spoiled, even from what happened in the 70s. I mean, my goodness, that team is one of the greats we've ever seen. And they're so bad right now that that comparison is really painful for Oriole fans.
Yeah, and I want to make clear, like, Cedric Mullins is not going out on the field thinking about finding ways to lose. He's a great player. Brandon Hyde, their manager, is not trying to find ways to lose. I think it comes down to spending and what's the resources you want to devote to the team as you go through your offseason work and you prepare for the year. You know, that to me is where the design failure comes in. Taylor, I know you saw some response to this conversation on social media yesterday and maybe from some friends.
Oh, yeah, Buster. Everyone in my life that loves the Orioles showed me that tweet. I think what happened is that I think the fans we're kind of over in our little corner of baseball being like, all right, we suck. The game suck. Everything sucks. It's okay. But when Buster comes down from the clouds with the hammer and kind of shines a light on, I think people just get naturally defensive. I think it would be nice obviously the IT management will never do this, but to admit they're just tanking and this is the plan and this is what we're sticking with, I think that's fine. And Tim, you mentioned Orioles fans being spoiled. Orioles fans my age, even a little older and definitely younger, like, so not spoiled. We don't remember any of that. I didn't exist during those days. So it's a completely different vibe. I wish we could say, oh, we had good times to fall back on, but we really don't. So that's a bummer.
Tim, within the context of the American League East, where you have the Yankees with their huge payroll, where you have the Boston Red Sox with their payroll capability, the Tampa Bay Rays, arguably the best run franchise, the Toronto Blue Jays with that amazing young core of players, when are the Orioles going to be relevant again?
It's going to be a while, Buster. And a couple of things have troubled me. I know, you know, privately, some of their people have said, well, look what we got left with here. I mean, it's going to take a while. When if you look at where the Orioles were, you know, they made the playoffs like 4 times in 7 years before this regime took over. It's not like they've been terrible for 15 years when they took over. It's a pretty darn good franchise when this new regime took over. So bottom line is this rebuild is going to take longer than the Astros, longer than the Cubs. And then when it does get done, where are they still going to be? Because the Blue Jays are only getting better from here. The Rays are always good. And the Red Sox and the Yankees have the money to be good every year if they choose to spend it. So this is going to take, I'm sorry, Taylor, this is going to take several more years before this becomes a contending team.
Yeah. And let's remember, as you know, and a lot of the response yesterday was, well, that's how the Cubs won the World Series. That's how the Astros won the World Series. There are a lot of teams that have tanked and it hasn't worked out. And what you have instead is sustained failure. And that's where the Orioles are right now. All right, Tim, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster, take care. Hey, good to see you at the cabin instead of at the baggage claim. Really good.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo, of course, Paul Imbecchiti is a researcher at ESPN. He's a honcho on the show Get Up. He tells us he's the head honcho. Mike Greenberg disagrees. Hembo, I got to listen, as I do on a lot of days, to you and Mike Greenberg on his radio show. It's really your radio show. Would you agree with me?
Yes, of course. I mean, the only reason they use the hashtag Greeny is for marketing purposes, for advertising dollars and such. But from a content perspective, it should be hashtag Hembo.
Yes. So I had to listen yesterday as you were making the case that Bryce Harper is the most underrated player in baseball. And I immediately texted Greeny and I was like, he's not even the most underrated player on his team. Zach Wheeler, who's probably right now the front runner to win the National League Cy Young Award, he to me would be the most underrated Philadelphia Philly. Please make your case for Mr. Harper.
Well, the reason I think Bryce Harper is the most underrated Buster is because of where he started, because of where he and Zach Wheeler started in relation to each other. The argument you're making is a really good one. Zach Wheeler has been the best pitcher in baseball this season. There are a lot of fans around the sport that just don't know that. But when you see, and I watch a lot of Phillies games, as you can imagine, and when you see Bryce Harper play around, you know, city to city in the National League, he still hears the overrated chance, whereas Bryce Harper's been one of the five best hitters in baseball over the last few seasons. So to me, it's more his career arc that is of interest. And I suppose less in prioritizing who is more or less underrated than he or Wheeler. Wheeler has had an outstanding season and is the front runner to win the Cy Young Award. And I think we'll actually get some down ballot MVP votes and should. But the reason I feel Bryce Harper has become so underrated, so underrated is because from becoming a prodigy to a phenom, then to legitimately overrated. There was a stretch in time in which he just wasn't very good, but that's still sort of the public consensus there, whereas the data indicate otherwise. He's become a top 10 player across the sport again.
Yeah, so Hembo, it must have been fun for you last week to do a victory lap, considering how quickly the Phillies made true your prediction that the Phillies would storm into first place, yes?
Yes. And I've gotten a bunch of tweets sort of congratulating me for that, which is kind of funny, I suppose, between the Phillies fans and the Brewers fans. Some of my predictions this year are holding true. But I have to be honest, in the Phillies case, the reason I thought the Phillies were likely to storm to the top of the division over the last 2 months of the season was actually because of their relative ease in strength of schedule, not necessarily because, you know, the Kyle Gibson and Ian Kennedy moves were going to somehow jolt the roster or that all of a sudden they would start hitting like crazy. To me, like, it was just a race for 85 wins in the National League East. The fact that they swept the Mets and pitched so incredibly well in that series even surprised me. So I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch as a fan of this team. There's still holes on this roster. And like you said before, the Braves are coming. The Braves are not going to fall by the wayside just because of the Acuna injury, especially considering how active they were at the trade deadline. But yes, it feels awfully good to be a Phillies fan right now. Obviously, we took the L yesterday, and that's sort of weird game around the rain delay. But my money is on the Phillies to win the National League East, and I'm obviously going to stand by that.
Yeah, we'll see. I do think the Braves are going to get better as we go along here. What do you got on the Red Sox?
So I have identified what I think are three potential fatal flaws for this team right now, which for my money is on the fast track to finishing fourth in the American League East. The first, Buster, is that they just can't catch. You mentioned this last week on the podcast. They rank dead last in all of baseball in defensive efficiency on grounders, on fly balls, and naturally overall. As an analytics guy, at least in some sense, which Alex Cora is, I would have to imagine that irks him to no end. Secondly, they can't finish innings. Their pitching staff has allowed 321 two-out hits. The only teams to allow more are the two worst teams in baseball, the Orioles and the Diamondbacks. They can't finish innings. And lastly, they can't finish games, as we saw last night. Buster, in the ninth inning this season, The Red Sox own the lowest batting average in baseball. They're batting 176 as a team in the ninth inning and have been outscored by 19 runs. That minus 19 run differential in the ninth inning is better than only the Minnesota Twins. So when you boil all those factors together, I think what you said yesterday on Get Upright is exactly right. Chris Sale might be the single most important player for any team the last month and a half of the regular season.
I tweeted out yesterday about the Orioles' non-competitive behavior. There certainly were some Orioles fans who were not happy about it because I said, look, either they're tanking or they're completely incompetent in putting together a roster. It has to be one or the other. What do you got?
Well, the Orioles right now are sort of in line to have the worst three-year run since the Tigers in the early 2000s, which is really saying something since those were historically bad teams. I understand where the Orioles are coming from in some sense because they're in a division that is just absolutely loaded with teams that can spend money. But that has always been the case. They have found ways to be competitive in the recent past. The thing that really bothers me, Buster, is I think the same thing that bothers you, and that there's no pattern. The pattern of behavior is such that it doesn't look obvious to me that that's going to change anytime soon. If they're not willing to spend money at all, it's one thing, but they're not fielding a remotely competitive roster. And what bothers me so much is that that really affects the pennant race. What ends up happening here in the American League East, to be specific here down the stretch, it's whoever can beat up on the Orioles the best or the most is going to wind up having the upper hand. And I just don't like that. I mean, I understand you're supposed to beat the teams you're supposed to beat, but in some sense, I think it's awfully bad for the sport that a pennant race or even a division race could in part be decided by the fact that you're just going to beat a Triple A team as many times as you possibly can, because that's effectively what this team is. I've always been a fan of something like a salary cap floor in baseball. We could argue, you know, probably too, we're blue in the face, the merits of that kind of idea, but the Orioles are candidly a joke right now. And the fact that it doesn't look obvious to me that it's going to change anytime soon is concerning, not only for the rest of the season and how it impacts the races, but moving into the future too, because I don't think it's a problem going away anytime soon.
Well, next time we talk, I want to talk to you about Shohei Ohtani and about his situation, because it is absolutely fascinating, the difficult decision that the Angels have coming up. All right, Hembo, I will talk to you soon.
Later, boys.
Get out of here, Hembo. Sick of Hembo.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday, and we only have one tweet, but actually I want to ask you, what animates you, Buster, to dive into your mentions and spar with all these Orioles fans that are coming at you? I know that you aren't attacking them. They feel attacked, but then you are like, I gotta get in the muck here. What inspires you to do that? You do it sometimes.
Well, and you know, when Twitter started, the cool thing I would think of myself as being, you know, a 10-year-old baseball fan growing up on a farm in Vermont. Right. Mm-hmm. And so in social media, you know, the idea that you're having a conversation in real time with folks who are you know, passionate about baseball, I always thought that was cool. And look, I, you know, I'll go back and forth. And if someone, you know, gives you a hard time, whatever, you sort of good naturedly give them a hard time back. You explain your position. I think it's incredibly important to be civil. You know, as you know, mm-hmm. not out there calling people names or anything like that. I don't mind, you know, having a discourse, because I you know, I think of it almost like being in a bar and having a conversation with another baseball fan. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I love it because lots of people won't engage. So I'm glad that you defended your position and let everyone know, hey, I'm not piling on. I'm just stating the obvious here. Let's go to our guy, Corey Rukert at CoreyR_12. Corey writes in, talking tanking today. Is there a direct correlation between no salary cap and tanking? If only six or seven teams can give the big contracts to the best players, what options do small markets have? I'd like to see a salary cap and floor.
Yeah. And first off, on the salary cap and floor, the union, in order to, you know, have a salary cap, the union would have to agree. And as a matter of principle, the union has made it clear it will not talk about a salary cap. I personally, and I know there are a lot of agents who believe that there could be a positive way, a positive outcome that'll actually be good for the players if they at least got into the discussions. But it doesn't seem like they're having any of those discussions at all. And yeah, look, under the current rules, you can understand why the Astros did what they did. You can understand why the Cubs did what they did. You can understand the strategy behind what the Orioles are doing. I just don't like the idea of teams basically quitting, and teams like the Athletics and the Royals and the Rays and the Brewers have demonstrated You don't have to tank to be competitive. And I hate the idea of the Orioles checking out potentially for a decade, when they have an opportunity to go out and try to win games and get better. I just find that to be offensive.
I'm with you, man. I mean, baseball is an entertainment product. I mean, when you're saying that tanking is bad for baseball, you're not wrong, because if you're tanking, you're not putting out an entertaining product, and therefore the game is no longer entertaining. So I think that's not like a crazy thing to say or anything. I don't know why people got so riled up. But anyway, please keep writing in #BleacherTweets on Twitter, and please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And actually, I'm sorry, last thing for today, I want to promote a couple things. Again, that ESPN Fantasy Football League, $250,000 at stake. If you are an ESPN Plus subscriber, go now to ESPNplus.com to sign up. No purchase necessary. You can visit ESPN.com/football rules for full details and official rules. And it is for folks in the U.S. only. And also, don't forget, Fantasy Football Focus is back every day. You can listen, follow, rate, and review that podcast wherever you listen to your podcast, or you can watch that on ESPN Plus as well every day at 10 a.m.
That's it for today. My thanks to Tim, Hembo, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.